Hello and welcome to a very special Christmas episode of I Am The Egg Pod. Or is that I Am The Eggnog? With me, Chris Shaw. The Egg Pods take a jaunty stroll through Pepperland, discussing the Beatles and solo Beatle albums with a potpourri of delicious guests. In this episode, it's a joy to welcome, and to quote from the Ballad of John and Yoko, it's good to have the both of you back, Sean Keaveney and Matt Everett. Hello.
Oh, what a pleasure it is, boys. Come and sit on my knee.
I feel very much like Elton John reuniting John and Yoko at Madison Square Garden.
Which you're both together. Which begs the question.
Oh, that's right.
Who's John? And I'm perfectly me happy too. To be both, but am I spurned? Although secretly in my heart, I know that we're going to get back together again and just biding my time in the audience, waiting for the moment. Or am I on stage knowing that he's probably not out there, but maybe he is, and maybe if I see him, all the pieces are going to fall into place again. Who am I?
No, I don't know, actually. Yeah, it's a good point. I'm not going to try and do a Yoko impression, but I could do a really bad John.
Shocking.
You can.
It's nice to do. Yeah, we haven't done a lot of stuff together, have we, recently, Sean? Not like that.
We actually went to the pub just last weekend, though, didn't we? And put the world to rights. But then Matt turned on his way. He said, I've better tell you now, I've got a really bad cold. So after about 3 hours and a bottle and a half of wine, I was just covered in a thin film of mucus.
Give me some of that rock and roll mucus. Any old way, you chukus. We were supposed to go to a gig and I was just so poorly we didn't make it to the gig, which is a bit of a shame. No. But it was nice to see you. Nice to see you again.
Well, I hope you look forward to catching that next week, Sean.
Hey!
Yeah!
And Sean, I'm very much enjoying your Community Garden Radio and Daily Grind podcasts.
Oh, thank you very much for the shout out. You know, I feel like a 20-year-old YouTuber. Like, I've never, this is one of the things I was moaning to the other half about. I'm talking about Matt now, last week. You know, it's the hardest I've ever worked. I thought that at the age of 51, I'd be an elder statesman of the media, and I'd be sort of, I'd be shuttling between my home and my sort of ranch in the west of Ireland, maybe a small villa in Tuscany somewhere, doing the occasional podcast, maybe the occasional Radio 2 special. But no, I'm like literally working like the Beatles at the Star Club. Yeah. You know what I mean? But having said all that, I'm absolutely loving it as well. So a bit like the Beatles as well, except that I don't have to sleep in a big pile of George Harrison's vomit or something like that. It's probably what happened.
Matt, congratulations on your latest Beatles show. I don't think a lot of people listening to this realise that you were behind that as well.
Yeah, that was our production company called Cup and Nozzle. We make lots of podcasts. We made some podcasts with Sean in the past. And we got, whatever the Beatles equivalent of the Bat phone is, whatever the Beatle phone is. It's like a big, it's probably green, apple green, isn't it? And it flashes. Yeah. And someone at the BBC says, we'd like you to make a Beatles podcast. And you go, yeah, but you've got to sign all these NDAs because something's happening. We can't talk about it. So we sort of went through the whole process of getting ready to making the podcast to coincide with the release of Now and Then, which we talked about a fair bit. And yeah, it turned out really, really well. Martin was brilliant. And hopefully it managed to be like interesting to people that don't know the story, and then to absolute massive obsessive anoraks like us, there was enough archive and new bits and stuff to make you go, okay, you know what, I know this story incredibly well, but I've quite enjoyed this particular telling of it. So hopefully, I think it did that. Martin, as I say, was just the best.
Oh, yeah. And so, Matt, I mean, I know, thanks very much. I recently did a thing about Now and Then, the new Beatles song, and you helped out with that. But Sean, what are your thoughts on the new Beatles song, Now and Then?
I was one of those people who found it, you know, pretty emotional, I suppose. I've spoken to quite a lot of people about it, and of course, you get the whole panoply of responses. A lot of the more slightly more cynical music people, understandably, are sort of saying, well, it's not a bloody, it's not a bloody Beatles song, is it? It's a bad John Lennon song, that's what they've done, buddy. And I won't have any truck with that. I don't want my rose-tinted spectacles being besmirched at all. I just think it's really, you know, somebody else was going, they just need product.
you know, every few years they need product, they'll dig something else up in town.
You know, that cynicism, and I get that. You know, I probably would be about that, like that about any other band. But with the Beatles, I just love whatever I can get. And I think what they did with the video and sort of the way that they can sort of meld them together now in that sort of the now and then kind of way, it's very emotional. It's a little bit, I've always said this and I've said it on here before, to me, John Paul, George and Ringo are like their uncles. Yeah. That I occasionally go and visit, you know, I go up the M6. And so the fact that they've done something all together again, I thought it was brilliant. And I do think the song stands up. I mean, it's lovely, and it's very.
Yeah, and I think it's that thing when it's, I don't know if it's goodbye, but it's the generation of people who not only made that music, but the people that were brought up around that music and were part of that world and elevated that music, the audiences and the fans, and in our case, our parents, or maybe like that generation of people, you know, if you're lucky enough to still have them around, well, they're not going to be around forever, that generation, because that is life. And so that song for me is about like that generation of people, not just that did that, but in your own life, and kind of going, you know, we love you. You gave us everything. You were brilliant, you know, and we love you now. We'll love you in the future. And, you know, we'll always think about you. So, yeah, that's what it's about. So what? And you can go, oh, yeah, sorry, John Lennon solo song. Shut up.
No.
It's the Beatles.
Stop it.
It's the Beatles' bloody White Album.
I was waiting for that.
First
6 minutes and 37 seconds in. First Shonky Macca impression. Brilliant.
There will be more.
Yeah, I'm very biased, so I did love it. The video, the first time I saw it, because I think a lot of people online waited for the video, and the first time I saw it, I was like, oh no, what is this? And then I watched it again and again and again, and it just didn't get any better. And that evening, my wife came home from work, and I was saying, I took the day off just so I could watch the video. That sounds sad. And I came home, and she was like, oh, how was it? And I was like, oh, man, it's awful. And we had tea or whatever, and then had a glass of wine. And then I said, yeah, you got to see this. It's so bad. And then she's the kind of Beatles fan, but not a huge Beatles fan like me. And she was like, oh, man, this is amazing. This is beautiful. And then I sort of saw it in a completely different light. The one thing I would say, I don't know if you've seen the film Brigadoon.
I haven't.
Oh, wow. Well, it's basically set in Scotland, and it's this little village that appears every 100 years for one day and then disappears again. And a guy, he falls in love with a woman, and he has the choice of, does he stay here or does he go to Brigadoon and disappear for 100 years? And it's very much like that. The Beatles just emerged into our lives just for 4 minutes and then disappeared again. And I was like crying my eyes. And since then, I think it's incredible. I love it. Absolutely love it.
And from sort of doing,
it is.
From being not on the inside, but having worked with obviously the BBC, but worked with Universal Music and worked with AppleCore on it, how AppleCore's ethos is just really, really beautiful. All the people there, like it's a commercial exercise in that it's an object that people are going to buy, but that is by no means the reason that they've done it. And the way they conducted themselves and they released it to the world at the same time, when there's a million ways they could have monetized that or got Apple to, you know, do a special or the BBC to do this or Spotify to do that. And they didn't. It was super democratic and done with love. And that made it feel really special to me, because having sort of seen them do it for those reasons and seeing like all the people at Apple are just exactly as nice as you would want them to be. And, you know, they're like super creative, super nice people. It's good to see that.
No.
Oh.
Part one.
Yeah. Now, bit of a juxtaposition. Today, we're talking about an album that contains, I would say, one song that I would put in the top 20 of any solo Beatle poll. It's I Wanna Be Santa Claus by Ringo Starr. And today we're going to be talking about some of our favourite songs from the album.
Oh, how... Like, what I've done Rubber Soul on this show, and I've done the Revolver reissue. Sean, what did you do? You did something pretty, pretty good.
I did Sgt. Pepper.
Right, so really, really good records. And then Wrapped Up in Tinsel. What do you give us, Chris?
I just love the idea of, I'm sure, I know that's the whole point of the deep dive, but I just love the idea of whenever it was 98, 99, and somebody at the record company or one of his mates saying, you know, that having a chat with Ringo, I want to do a Christmas album. Yeah, great, great idea. Do a Christmas song. Yeah, it's a brilliant idea. I'll help you with that. No, a whole album. Are you? Sorry, say that again. You want to do a whole Christmas album? Yeah, I think it's a great idea.
However, as will become apparent, I mean, obviously I'm biased because I love him. There are moments on this record. There's some moments on this record, but there's some moments on this record. Anyway, Chris, please.
Yeah.
Well, provide us with context.
I'll just give you a bit of a background and then we'll crack on. So the idea started in July 98, after Ringo had completed his fourth all-star band summer tour, which was with Gary Brooker from Procol Harum, Jack Bruce from Cream, and Peter Frampton. And while he was at home in Surrey, he composed two songs, Dear Santa and Christmas Eve, with a guy called Mark Hudson. Mark has basically worked as a producer and a songwriter with artists such as Cher, Aerosmith, Ozzy Osbourne and Harry Nilsson. And from this moment on, he went on to produce or co-produce a further 9 Ringo albums. So to give you an idea of how closely they worked together, from the 65 songs that Ringo composed for these albums, Mark Hudson was credited as co-writer for 64.
Go on, Mark.
Good old Mark. Sadly, partnership eventually ended in 2006. Some say it was because Mark withdrew at the last minute from one of Ringo's tours as he'd been offered a role in a US TV show, The One, Making a Music Star. It's like an X Factor kind of thing. But back to this album. The session started in September 98. So for context, that's like a couple of years after all the anthology albums came out.
Mm. Yeah.
And then stopped and then recommenced in March 99. In LA, mixing was done at AM and Sterling Sound. Sadly, Ringo's label at the time, which Sean, I think you kind of alluded to, Mercury, barely promoted the album, and predictably it failed to chart. So not long afterwards, Ringo and Mercury rather acrimoniously parted ways. And Ringo said, "They actually gave the Christmas album no support. We have now parted company due to their incompetence. They let me go. I'm hoping to record another studio album, and I'm hoping it will be on any other label than Mercury." So,
oh, I mean, there's a lot there.
Yeah.
First of all, like,
I wanna...
like, let Ringo record whatever he wants. Like, I know what you mean, Sean, but, like, it's Ringo. Let him record whatever he wants. Like, no one's saying you've got to try and put a $20 million marketing campaign behind it, but release it, give the guy some props. Put some ads in the papers, let people know it's there. It's Ringo. Let him do whatever he wants. Mm. First thing, I think. Go on.
I just love that. I want to do an Easter album. Oh, here we go again. No! I'm sorry! Halloween!
As you'd expect, there are some familiar faces on the album. You've got Timothy B. Schmidt from the Eagles, Joe Perry from Aerosmith, and the ever-present constant for 1990s Beatles recordings, Jeff Lynne.
Of course.
They couldn't get rid of him, could they? They couldn't shake him.
Absolutely. What's the dog?
He found out somehow.
Is it the Bichon Frise, the little dog that looks like Jeff Lynne?
Yeah. The sunglasses.
Sunglasses, little hat. Bichon Frise, Jeff Lynne. Now, I can't think of Jeff Lynne without thinking of him as a small...
Oh, that's really good.
A small coiffured dog. And I love Jeff Lynne. He's great. But, like, always there. Always there.
He always finds out. Oh, God,
it's funny. He's got a nose for it.
He's just what? He's saying, like, right, we'll just start the tape rolling. Oh, there's someone at the door. All right.
he's the candy man of the Beatles, isn't he? He's just
Jeff Lynne five times in front of the mirror. Yeah. There he is.
You say overproduced snare drum sound five times.
So, shall we start with track 1? Come on, Christmas. Mm. Christmas, come on. And this is co-written by Ringo, Mark Hudson, and Dean Grekal. And it, talking of which, features Jeff Lynne on vocals.
I don't know what he was doing revisiting the glitter beat, like, on a track at this point. Something that should be avoided at all costs for very obvious reasons.
Well, I mean, it's funny you should say that, because if not that anybody would have the record to reference, but Matt, the 2006 London's 104.9 XFM Euro football song that we recorded had a glitter beat on it, and I don't think that it's actually, you know, sort of trademarked by that particular band. I actually will say, I'm going to chime in with a note of optimism here at the start, Chris, and I'm going to say for me, this is one of the better tracks, right? For that reason, because there's nothing better than hearing Ringo Starr playing a floor tom, in my view. It's always going to be a winner. And so for that reason, and I will say that right now, all the way through, the grooves and the drums, on point.
Exactly.
Absolutely brilliant. Yep. No two ways about it. And I even like the sort of the rip-off, all right, that Ringo does, which is like, that's off Mama, We're All Crazy Now or something, isn't it? So it's a bit T-Rex, it's a little bit sweet, and I think that it almost succeeds, this one.
Well, I mean, having said glitter beat, I would say it's the Boland beat. I would say you could probably, if one was going to ally it to like a, I'd say it's the Mark Boland thing, which is fine.
Metal Guru, isn't it? Metal Guru,
exactly. Wasn't Boland and Ringo buddies? Or am I getting that completely wrong? I think they were friends, weren't they? Yeah, they were. They were friends, weren't they?
Ringo produced his movie. Yeah.
There you go. Oh yeah, of course. Yeah.
And you must remember as well, there was that scene in one of the TV programs. It was like Lady and the Tramp with the spaghetti, but it was Mark and Ringo with a massive line of cocaine, and they sort of met in the middle like that. I'm sure I remember seeing that somewhere.
I mean, I'll always hear Ringo play the drum sound. As Sean says, the drum sound's amazing, but I don't really know. Come on, Christmas, Christmas, come on. I mean, Christmas is coming anyway. You can't stop it, can't speed it up. So I don't really know what he's hoping is going to happen as a result of this track.
I don't know many adults, actually, that are wishing Christmas on. You know what I mean?
Right.
Once you get past the age of about 24, at the very outside, you go in, it's coming too fucking fast for me, because I haven't done any of the shopping yet, and we've got a bloody party on the 23rd. We've not, you know, so I don't know anybody, any adult. But then again, Beatles have got Arrested Development to some degree, I suppose, haven't they?
Yeah. So you're saying what it should have been called is Come On Anxiety, Come On. Come On Financial Instability, Come On. Come On Overdraft, Come On Family Stress.
Yeah.
Come On
That's it.
Come On Simmering Resentment of Estranged Family Members, Come On. Is that really what it should be called?
I love it. I think that's a really good idea.
Also, nothing says Christmas like an album recorded in June or July in Los Angeles. It really is. at least Slade did theirs like in whatever it was, June, but it was in Wolverhampton.
New York, wasn't it?
It was like you could, certain places that have got an inherent base level of like winteriness that I can associate with. But LA is not Christmas, is it? It's not.
Well, if what you've done is you've imported so much Colombian marching powder that when you look out of the studio window, it looks like, you know, the start of Ski Sunday, then maybe it does get you in the mood.
Surely Ringo's in a pretty good place by this point, isn't he?
Oh, no, sorry. You're absolutely right. I've time slipped by 20 years. Yeah. He's completely clean now.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he's completely clean.
Yeah. Him and Barbara. Like, super.
Oh, wow. I love it. This is one of my favourites. When I say one of, there's only one other. But it's, the same universe as Back Off Boogaloo, I think.
Yeah. Which is brilliant.
Which is great.
That's it. Don't the we'll come on to the other ones, because he uses the Boogaloo beat again, I think, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Next, track two, Winter Wonderland.
A cover of the famous Christmas song, Winter Wonderland.
Yeah, this was written in 1934 by Felix Bernard and Richard Bernard Smith. Been covered by more than 200 artists, from Tony Bennett and Lady Gaga to Elvis Presley, Ella Fitzgerald and Bing Crosby. But this is Ringo's version.
I think... Go on, Sean. Go on, you go first.
No. Well, I mean, first of all, it's worth mentioning, even though he's an unmentionable character in and of himself, Phil Spector, but he comes up a lot.
I get to the blue hat.
It's not my dependent.
Hang on. What's this, Beeps?
I get to the blue and crown of love and the cracker. We can do this tomorrow, and I get to the
news. Okay. Well, come say goodnight in a minute.
Night, Angel.
Night.
She's like, no, I'm gone. Not interested in you old guys talking about the Beatles. Okay.
Yeah, it was fun. That was just a short break while my daughter came in and gave me a blue paper Christmas hat, which I'm now wearing, just to add to the thing.
Blue Christmas. I mean, to mention the unmentionable, in my view, most of these songs, the best cover versions are the ones that appear on the sort of Phil Spector Christmas album, the ones that the kind of Ronettes do and people like
that.
I don't think this is any exception. I mean, I'm pretty. Isn't this the one that starts like the Minder theme tune?
It is.
It sort of goes down. It's a bit like that. It's a little bit George Cole, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's pretty cool.
Was Ringo ever in Minder? He would have been good in Minder, wouldn't he? You know, when there was that spate of like having 80s rock stars in, like, it'd be Phil Collins in Miami Vice, wouldn't it? Or like, oh, here's the Power Station in, you know, some LA cop thing or whatever.
It was more America, wasn't it? Like Boy George was in the A-Team, wasn't it?
There you go. That's what I'm talking about. But how?
Yeah.
Why don't we have Ringo in Minder?
Let's play with this a little bit. How would you cast, as a casting director in the 80s, casting him in Minder, would he be like behind the bar at the you know, that pub that they always go in, or would he be like a gangster of some description, Matt? What do you
think? I think either Spiv, like he's got a little bit of that 50s thing going on anyway, opens his jacket, he's selling like knockoff drumsticks or something. Or boxing training.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, that's a twist I wasn't expecting. Yeah.
So he's
a bit like Mickey, from Rocky, exactly. But like with a Scouse accent.
You've got it. Can you do? Which is a cue for me to say, can you do that impression? Because I know you can do what's his chops from Rocky. I know you can do Ringo. Can you put the two together?
Oh wow, that's incredible, isn't it? I mean, it's going to be like the end of Ghostbusters if we put those two together.
I want to hear it.
You got nothing. All right, you call that fighting? You got nothing. All right, get out there. Never mind, Adrian.
Yeah,
terrible.
I'm in.
Very good.
I'm in on that. Oh God, I love. It's so difficult because I love him so much. I genuinely do. Genuinely do love him, and you know that all these songs have been done without side, without like he's not doing it for any other reason than the fact he wants to do it and he thinks people will love it. And that's the best reason to do anything, isn't it, really?
Yeah. It's childlike and innocent in a way, isn't it?
But then you've got the Bob Dylan Christmas album.
Oh, yeah. He did. He nailed it, didn't he? But that's bloody Bob, isn't it, again? Classy Bob.
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. come sit at my knee.
No, I'm not.
I want to be Santa Claus. Like Santa Claus, I'd give them away to all the girls and boys.
Next, track 3, I Wanna Be Santa Claus. This is another Ringo and Mark Hudson conversation, this time with Dick Monder, and the album's title track is apparently about spreading Christmas cheer on every day of the year rather than just Christmas Day.
Peace. Ron Wood would have something to say about that, wouldn't he? That was his idea, wasn't it?
Yeah, he's copyrighted that.
Wish it could be Christmas every day.
He's got the IP.
Got the IP on that. And the QC. I just think he always puts me in mind very much as well. I love the juxtaposition with Ringo sometimes. Like, you know, we just want, all we want to do is give, you know, peace and love, like, throughout the world, you know, but please stop sending me shit to sign all the time. I love that. It reminds me of that moment in his life, you know.
I'm warning you with peace and love.
Yeah. But in every sentence, a paradox.
But, I mean, but, it does beg two questions. I want to be Santa Claus. One, would you really want to be Santa Claus in terms of the stress? I mean, obviously...
The admin.
The admin is going to be huge. I mean, these days, obviously, like, you know, people are more concerned with mental health, which is a good thing. So I think people are more aware of the pressures that Santa was under for a long time, probably from the, like, early 1500s onwards till the 80s. No one gave a shit about him. Yeah. He really did...
They didn't care. They just get him drunk, wouldn't they? They'd just like leave loads of, even though they knew he was a functioning alcoholic, they'd leave half a bottle of bloody sherry out for him, knowing that next door had done the same thing. They don't care.
Yeah.
They don't think about his hypertension, about his the mince pies.
So,
no, I think it would be AI though. I think that no, Santa uses AI most of the time to do a lot of the grunt work, so it's not really such a problem. I also question, I just think, wouldn't Santa, if you asked him, rather be Ringo?
Ooh.
You know what I mean? I think it would have been a cleverer song if he'd done it the other way around. That sounds like a bit more like a West Coast rapper's kind of aggrandizing statement, but you know, I honestly think that Santa, if you asked him, would swap with Ringo in a hot minute.
Okay, so now we are being quite dismissive generally of Ringo here, but I'm gonna ask you a question and there's only one answer. Of the four Beatles, one of them's got to be the real Santa. Who is it? It's Ringo, isn't it?
It's Ringo.
Yeah.
George, far too grumpy to be Santa, right?
And tight. Tight as two coats of paint.
A, wouldn't buy you any presents because they're material objects. Doesn't want to do that. However, he'd probably use some of the money like to get some really mad sports cars simultaneously. John would probably be deconstructing the whole idea of Father Christmas for everyone.
Ruining it.
Paul's an elf, you know, and I don't mean that as an insult. I mean, he's all about making the things. He's the one making the toys.
Good. That's good.
He's the one taking all the requests. He's doing the hard work at the workshop. He's delivering like banger after banger, present after present to the entire world. Often, sometimes without even people realizing how amazing the elves are.
Yeah.
Every so often, you know, the elf gets some love, but like he's the man really making.
Just don't let that sleigh go, because I'm just going to put a little bit more wood polish on it.
Exactly.
You know, just going to get it just right, you know.
So who's Santa? Yeah. It's Ringo. He's jolly. He's got a beard. You can see him sitting in front of your fireplace with aforementioned glass of port and brandy, maybe in the 70s, and a mince pie, and just generally being ho, 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 you know.
And just to add here, just very quickly, to that lovely little tableau that you've created, there, Matt, I was with you all the way there. Could we also just mix into it Keith Moon? You know, have you seen the Kids Are All Right movie where it's Ringo and Keith absolutely bladdered on brandy?
On their medicine.
That's it. Me and Keith, we've had a lot of medicine. If we could mix Keith into the picture somewhere as well, like a naughty elf, it would be amazing.
Right, you keep talking. I've just got to do a little one bed bit back in a mo.
He's having a little Christmas poo.
Well, just a message for any children listening. Please don't listen to Sean. Santa does exist, but he isn't a functioning alcoholic.
Oh, that's true. I mean, I completely redoubled that statement. Father Christmas, you know, he certainly on Christmas, he only drinks one day a year. And he's got a very high tolerance anyway, and he spends the rest of the year detoxifying anyway, so he deserves it.
Four, The Little Drummer Boy. This was written in 1941 by Catherine Kennicott Davis apparently the idea came to her when she was trying to have a nap and the song came into her head, and it was supposed to have been inspired by a French song called Patapan. And once Patapan got stuck in her head, it evolved into Pa-ra-pa-pum-pum, and this is Ringo's version.
Well, it's good timing in a sense, they said, when I just went to pick up one of the kids and whack the old radio on. And Wilf, the middle boy, and funnily enough, I'm taking him to the O2 to watch Ice Cube on Monday, which is can't think of anything less Christmassy than that. But and then the little drummer boy, the David Bowie and Bing Crosby version, came on the radio, and I was trying to explain to Wilf that, you know, if you think I'm an old fart, Wilf, this is the ultimate iteration of that. David Bowie, the hot young thing, doing a duet with a guy who was about 4 months away from death. And, you know, that's the ultimate version for me. And this, obviously, well, I mean, what do you think, guys?
Well, I mean, I love the drumming. It's...
Yeah, back off Boogaloo again.
It's really good.
Yes,
it's,
very much
it's
so.
It's really good drumming.
Mm, really good.
And although you're right, I do love the Bowie and Bing version, if only for the video where Bing hasn't got a clue who Bowie is.
he thinks he's had too much blood pressure medication, doesn't he? He's sort of looking at him like he's an apparition. It's like, is this fucking real? This thing.
Bowie is almost sort of translucent at that point in his career, isn't he? The amount of the amount of sleep he wasn't getting, etc. But then there's such a beautiful vocal thing. Because yeah, anyway, it's Ringo in his heart. He's the little drummer boy. He's the lad whose parents bought him that one drum. Dong 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 dong, and hit it for hours. Dong dong, for weeks and months till they bought him another one. Dong 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 dong. That's what he did. He is the little drummer boy. You know that I don't have any. It's corny. It's slightly sort of saccharine, but that's who Ringo is. He's a little kid with the instrument, the one instrument that you hit, but you do something amazing with it. You bring your gift to the three wise scousers.
Oh, that's good.
I don't know.
That's good.
Something
there.
Three wise scousers.
Yeah.
But is it, each verse goes along, it gives more of a pause, so there's more of a bit of drumming.
Yeah,
going like this. It's nothing amazing, but it's so Ringo sounding.
Yeah. It's just got his feel. It feels like the Ringo groove. No one else can play like that. That's it.
Is it? He's got a lovely lope, hasn't he? And that's that's the modern music has been built on the back of what he did. You know, for whatever you think. And I think also it's interesting that there are a couple of little autobiographical inflections on this record, this being one. I'm a little drummer boy. And then I also think also of, you know, the one about Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, because I think Rudolph and Ringo have both got the most famous noses in popular history, haven't they?
I thought you were about to say they've got similar story arcs. Do they?
I mean, Rudolph's last three albums were absolutely shit.
Yeah.
He has signed with Mercury, which is nice.
But once again, it's being done with love. It's being done because he wants to do it, and he thinks other people will love it. You know, he's like there's that. I'm going to get a bit more serious now. It's like when they all the Beatles, I think, to a lesser or greater degree, they want to please. You know, and as much as they're doing things for themselves, and they made music so often in quite an insular way, or like a way that was just looking inwards to them. They wanted other people to like what they did. Mm. And like, he's doing this because he wants people to like it, and he thinks they'll like it, and that's why he's doing it. I mean, I'm sure we'll come on to the competition in the Beatles Christmas Song Stakes, but he's up against some heavy competition, let's be honest.
Yeah. But I've done a whole album.
Laughing.
Track 5, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
You know, this is what I'm saying. It's, you know, it's a little bit autobiographical. It's, this is him.
He's back.
Simpatico with another mammal who has an iconic nose and who is essentially leading their, what a lot of people might perceive, more important charge through, you know, a sort of a snowy, difficult path. You know, that's the metaphor I'm overreaching for. I think they've got a lot in common. You know, like John and Paul are sort of like Santa, and, you know, he's like Rudolph at the front. I don't really know where George fits into that.
Bit of history about the song. It was written by Johnny Marks.
Johnny Marks?
Johnny Marks. Mm. After his brother-in-law, Robert L. May, created the character of Rudolph for a story in 1939. Mm. And he was inspired to turn the story into a song in 1949. Gene Autry recorded a hit, and it hit number one in the charts. But in this version, there's a nice bit where Ringo cocks up the lyrics, but they kept it in. Oh. So he sings Santa instead of Rudolph. And it's very much like, oh, yeah, whatever. But they don't do another take. They just keep it in.
Oh,
I'm not
good doing
another take.
He said Santa. No, he didn't. He said Rudolph. One, you
get the sleigh tonight. At the end, he starts singing Ringo the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Yeah.
Which I think is quite sweet.
Yeah.
Which proves your point, Sean. Yeah,
I think Ringo can associate, not necessarily, well, with the nose thing. It's quite childish, frankly. But I think that idea of being the sort of, you know, not unloved one at the start, you know, he was quite a sickly kid, wasn't he? You know what I mean? He off school a lot. He was a boy that didn't realise his potential until given the opportunity to hit a drum, you know? So
yeah.
I think that's
ooh, okay. Yeah, I like that.
That's the parallel.
It's like thinking about that lyric, you're absolutely right.
Yes.
Then one snowy Christmas Eve, Santa came to say, and that's essentially Pete Best's gone, and John and Paul come over, Ringo, with your drums so thick, won't you come and play with us, or something. Yes, great, I love that.
There you go.
Wow.
That's why you chose it.
You've just changed the whole Beatles story with that.
Yep.
It's Christmas, with stars above. How many times has it been said, a time for love? And underneath the mistletoe, I'm standing here all alone on Christmas, Christmas Eve. I hear your
Track 6, Christmas Eve.
This is a really good song. This is a really good song. Right, I hopefully that we're not going to come to Christmas loggerheads about this, because I think this is a bit of an underrated classic. I think Ringo's vocal is lovely. He's got that sort of good night delivery, which is sort of half speaking, half singing, which he does. I think it's quite a beautiful sentiment. I think any modern pop singer trying to do that kind of ballady Christmas thing, Bublé would be happy with this. Maybe not the arrangement. I think this is a bit of a brilliantly written song. Don't look at me like that. It is.
Yeah. What I'm willing to accept is that I probably need to listen, go back, have a think about what you've done, and have a listen again to it. I do think you're right, though. I think that's sort of the sort of deadpan vocal that he does, you know, it just really does lend itself to some things, you know, and it's that kind of, he almost reminds me of Orville the duck sometimes.
Oh, come
that
on.
Kind of not in the tone, but the range of his voice. But well,
the tone or range that Orville possesses.
He's famous for. Yeah.
Let me just tell you, he can go from a low C all the way through seven octaves like Mariah Carey. He's very surprising, especially when he's got Keith Harris's hand up his arse.
I wish I could fly way up to the sky, but I can't.
You can?
I can't. I wish I could see what folks see in me, but I can't.
You can?
I can't.
Look, Orville.
Yes?
Nothing that you can say will change how I feel today. I know that we're never apart. Now hear what I'm saying, Orville.
Yes?
Who is your very best friend?
You are.
I'm gonna help you mend your broken heart.
Thank you.
But Ringo, you know, he's got that kind of that every loser wins vibe. In his voice is what I mean, but he does wonders with it, and maybe I need to go back to that and have another listen.
I'm still thinking about Orville's like alternative career as like
Mariah Callas.
Well, no, yeah, I'm more kind of like if you haven't heard Orville in Memphis, that's really the one where he found his voice.
Yeah. It's Orville's like Sun Sessions.
Yeah. You can hear him sometimes. You can hear him in the toilet warming up.
Think like his the stuff, because his baritone mixed very well with Scott Walker's baritone. So when the pair of them,
that's true, yeah,
did that.
Yeah,
that
it was nice.
Yeah, when they worked together.
Crosby, Stills, and Orville,
and Young.
Actually, yeah, Neil and Orville have got a bit of a similar voices, really. Yeah.
Oh, bear with me. Jumping off again. Sorry.
Okay, yeah. Advert break. I feel like I'm watching. I do feel like I'm watching a movie on YouTube here.
Yeah, exactly. Is it fucking hilarious? I'm going to get myself a glass of water, Chris.
I'll do it.
Do it.
Get a
glass of water. But who else are you? Have you got any other big names lined
I've
up
got
or stuff?
Backlogs going back like 3 years, because basically the Get Back thing happened, and that pushed back all of those. Yeah, there's all sorts.
You've got loads that you've actually got on the hard drive, but you've not.
No. I once I've recorded them, I try and get them up within the next couple of weeks or so.
Oh, I see.
So I'm always behind. But I've always got a back. But it takes me so long to research, because I've got like a full time job.
Yeah.
I mean, this took like a few days to research just for this. So, yeah. But and I've still got to do All Things Must Pass. So you know, it's like, and I do want to get. And I want to try and find stuff that people haven't talked about before as well with albums as well, because it's easy. That was the same old, you know. Oh, Sgt. Pepper. It was Pet Sounds. They were trying to, you know, everybody's done that.
Yeah.
And yeah, it takes so long. I'm really struck. I think I've got 1 year left before it sort of fizzles out. Because there's not much left to.
I don't know, mate. I think you've
got a great niche here, though. A lot of people love it.
A big niche, and people love it. I think, you know.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It's a lovely
we'll
thing.
See how it goes. So anyway, right, okay. Christmas Eve. So this was another Ringo and Mark Hudson composition back in July 1998 at Ringo's home. And I think, yeah, it's because it starts very much like a Commodore's song, that sort of piano. And so I can gather why, you think it's going to be slushy. And it is kind of slushy, but what you were saying earlier about Ringo's voice, because it's all sort of, you know, you've got like this Hollywood blockbuster going on behind him, but in the front you've got Ringo just singing the song like that.
Yeah.
And I love that juxtaposition. It's just like this bloke thrown in front of an orchestra.
But
I love that.
It's also that thing where, because this is the song that I really like on the record. I really, really genuinely like this song. And when Ringo himself talks about him writing his lyrics, like, he doesn't think about lyrics in the same way as maybe his former bandmates thought about lyrics. He just thinks of a lyric and that's it. It's done, isn't it? You know, you're in a car crash and you lost your hair. You know, just yeah. Amazing. Anyway, so back to my point. This song, the lyrics for this song, have got that, what the pretentious might call naivete to them, but it makes them all the more effective. It's Christmas and you're not here. The snow is falling down like my tears. I see your presence by the tree. I can't believe you're not with me on Christmas, Christmas Eve. A, why has he got presents if you're not still together? Presumptive. That's weird. Like, so are you buying presents for this person who's not going to come and pick him up? It's going to come to Christmas Day, which he's going to be sitting there, and there's his love's gifts are just there, still wrapped. Verse 2, it's Christmas with stars above. How many times has it been said a time for love? Which is a bit of a word soup, it's got to be said, Ringo. And underneath the mistletoe, I'm standing here all alone. Mistletoe, alone. Para rhyme, give it to you. On Christmas, Christmas Eve.
Nice.
Right?
It's nice.
I'd rather have that than like some incredibly verbose, super... lyric that someone's poured and they've really tried to create something that's unreal. That's just Ringo. That's the character he's playing. It's how he's feeling. It's final verse. I like this song. It's Christmas. It seems so long. The lights are around the tree, but not turned on. I saw your footprints in the snow. I never thought you'd really go on Christmas, Christmas Eve. Yeah.
That does get you at the end.
Yeah, the lights are on the tree, but they're not turned on. Sad.
And also, I wondered if it might be about John.
Oh.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
You're always going to be in danger of thinking that with a sort of
I do that with every song, or maybe Maureen Cox.
Oh.
Which would make sense, but I think it's Love Lost.
Yeah. Oh, Ringo.
But he's a soft lad, our Ringo, isn't he? You know, I mean, he feels very deeply, but like in the nicest possible way.
Yeah.
No, he is. He's you know, it is saccharine, but you're right. I think that I've misjudged it a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think I'm looking forward to going back and putting that on my Christmas playlist.
Yeah, screw you, Sean. Have a heart.
Yeah. Screw me. By the way, I'm just going to go and get my charger because I'm an amateur. One second. An issue here. I just thought that my battery doesn't die because I've forgotten that there's you might want to keep this in the podcast, Chris. It's fascinating, but there's some bit in one of the ports for my charger, and I can only plug one thing at a time into my laptop. So that means that I can't plug my charger. It's not going to go for quite a bit yet. But I was just getting a bit paranoid in case it did. This is the first time I've realised that it's an issue because I've been blowing it, I've been fiddling about with it. Anyway, let's keep going until if I disappear, then it's going to have to be like you guys doing Now and Then without John.
Tonight's the Christmas dance in London town. The lights are up, the snow is falling down. Like every year I catch your eye across the lawn, but too afraid to do much more at the Christmas dance. That magic time of year when dreams come true. The only dance I wanna dance is you. The music's playing, hearts are swaying to the rhythm of romance. At the Christmas dance.
Track 7, The Christmas Dance.
Kind of a sort of rock and rolly number, isn't it, really?
Can you recognise that bit that goes down, 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 down on the guitar?
It's
reminds me of something, and I can't
think. Down, 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 down. Yeah, it's very, very, very indicative of lots of rock and roll things, isn't it?
If you have a listen at the end where he holds the note for about 20 seconds. It's like Christmas dance.
We know that he likes, I mean, aside from Ringo being very fond of sort of rock and rolly, country and westerny kind of things that this is, Ringo's a very good dancer, is he not?
Is he?
You've seen, there's that amazing bit in Hard Day's Night when they sort of...
Yes.
They've done whatever they've been doing that day and they decant off to a... No, you decant. They decant off to a sort of swinging hep club, which is presumably the Scotch of St. James or something. And Ringo's dancing like an absolute maniac. He looks brilliant. Have you not seen... He's kind of twisting and frogging and shaking his hair in an absolutely unabandoned sort of frenzy of joy. And, of course, everyone's looking at him and the girls are sort of like looking at him and kind of like, wow, he can bop. Ringo can, and he's just loving it. He's not, there's not an, like Ringo generally, there's not an affected bone in his body, I don't think. And so, obviously we saw John dance a little bit, a fair little bit in Get Back. But I think if at a Christmas party, that's, you want to be dancing with Ringo. In fact, look, you can go to a Christmas party with anyone from the Beatles. Okay, try this one. You can take anyone to a Christmas party, right? Of the Beatles, any era, any member, who's it going to be? I'm saying Ringo, 78, is going to be a really good Christmas party.
Bloody hell! I mean it would be an expensive Christmas party as well, wouldn't it? I just think that really what we're coming up against all the time, and this probably goes for a lot of bands, and I think Matt, you might concur with this with your own experiences, is that really you always want to go out for a few pints with the drummer, because in all seriousness, you know, the lead singer takes themselves too seriously. The same can usually be said for the lead guitarist.
Who just wants to be the singer.
They're always arguing. The bass player is, you know, it's deeply boring usually, and we'll start talking to you about mixers and, you know, apart from Mark King. And you know, you want the drummer, and so and I know it's a bit different in the Beatles because most of them are singing and playing at the same time, but it's all, the answer is always Ringo if you want to have a good time.
Yeah, absolutely. And
if you want to have a dance,
yeah. So I want to go to a Christmas party with Ringo, mid to late 70s, John in Hamburg. I want to go to Christmas party, Hamburg.
Ooh,
John.
Really?
That would be, you know.
Dangerous.
You'd probably have to just sit back and let it all happen, but I think that could be quite eventful.
Yeah, a face full of Mandy's.
Yep.
And then down the Reaper Barn. Good God.
I want to be. Paul would throw the best family Christmas in 1983.
I would sort of say Mullikin Tyree.
Oh, you're going to go farm. You know,
Scottish farmhouse.
There's going to be an amazing veggie roast, like, that's going to just blow your mind, isn't there? There's going to be literally a stables, and there's going to be sheep, real sheep, his sheep. There's going to be kids running about. He's going to be invited Auntie Lil and Auntie Norman or whatever the names are. I bet Macca does the best old school family soy pigs in blankets, homemade crackers. I bet. Well, he's supposed to do that thing, isn't he? That he does Christmas songs, doesn't he? He's recorded a whole bunch of Christmas songs, but only for his family. Have you heard about this?
No.
Yes. No. Okay. So this he talked about it a few years ago, didn't he? Over the years, for his grandkids and his kids, he records Christmas songs, but doesn't release them. Just plays them at Christmas.
That's beautiful.
And I think if I'm from memory, I remember sort of saying that, like, you know, the sort of older the kids get, the more they're kind of like, oh, here we go again. All right, Dad. Put it away. But the grandkids are like, yay! Granddude's got another Christmas song.
Granddude.
Okay, so what era George Christmas then?
Seychelles Christmas, him, Terry Gilliam.
No, you're right.
Eric Idle. You know, everybody's sitting around, you know, really going for it, you know, taking the piss out of each other, throwing each other over the side of the ship. You know, that'd be a good one. Seychelles Christmas.
One of those holidays that's on the other side of the world. It's got nothing to do with Christmas. Yeah. It's like it's on Bernie Eccleston's yacht or something. It's one of those. It's an Eric Idle Christmas with George. There we go. We sorted it out in the end.
Sorted that out.
Christmas time is here again.
Track 8, Christmas Time, is here again.
Is this the point we talk about the album cover?
If you want.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it looks... That looks like that it was created by AI in 2017, when AI was really, really, you know, sort of really poor. It looks like something that might have been burped out of some kind of Photoshop program or something.
It's a sort of cartoon drawing of Ringo in quasi-Santa beard and hat with a bit of holly. Ringo Starr written in what can only be described as a sort of shocking pseudo-70s yeah, prog rock font, followed by I Want to Be Santa Claus. But the whole thing, and A, Ringo's green. For some reason, Ringo's bright green.
Mm. Is he gone like he's like a sort of elf Grinch. Or something?
I guess so. But the whole thing's got the... It looks like it's been drawn by like a GCSE art yeah. student with like, you know, you used to get those big packs of multicoloured sort of pencils for Christmas. Maybe that's what it is.
Yes.
And it's pretty. It's not very good. I quite like a lot of Ringo's artwork, but this is not because he just puts a bunch of stars on it. The vinyl's 113 quid on eBay. What the?
I tell you what, it's very expensive online, this album. Incredibly expensive. Probably because nobody bought it, unfortunately.
Wow.
I just think...
Under 13 quid.
Is this song the one that the Beatles did in 1967? Yeah. So yes. if anybody's allowed to do a cover version of it, it's Ringo, obviously, because he was in the band. However, how anybody thought for a minute, even Ringo, that, you know, unless you'd had a bad blow to the head, you wouldn't think you're going to do a better version, you know. And... I don't see how anybody would choose to listen to this version as opposed to the original. I find that very difficult to believe.
I'm just having a look at some of the reviews on Amazon, and they're universally amazing.
Great, he's got a big family, though.
Great Christmas CD. I love this Ringo disc. My new favourite Christmas disc. It's a fun album. It sounds like the Beatles album. No, it doesn't.
Does he say? Do a lot of them say peace and love at the end?
Weird. Yeah, this is the perfect Christmas CD. Peace and love. Don't ask me to sign it. I was never a big Ringo fan, but after hearing I Want to Be Santa Claus on Pandora? I checked this out. It was only £2.99 for an MP3 download. Oh, that's ages of it, isn't it? I want to give it 5 stars. Wow. Ringo sings Christmas as well as anyone.
5 Ringo stars.
Five gold Ringos. Da, 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 da,
absolutely.
Wow.
I think this is, for me, the most interesting song. I mean, you've got Joe Perry from Aerosmith on guitar. And, yeah, as Sean, as you said, this was a cover of the Beatles version, which was released on the fan club Flexi. And just a bit of history about the Beatles version. So it was recorded on 28th of November 67, parts of which were used for the fan club Flexi. But the full version, well, almost full, was released on December 95 on the Free as a Bird single. So the songwriting credit on this means that this is one of the only two Beatles songs released during their lifetime with a Lennon-McCartney-Harrison-Starkey credit. So can you name the other song?
That's not Now and Then.
That's got all four of them on it.
As songwriters, yeah. During their lifetime. During the Beatles.
Is it Octopus's Garden?
No, from 67.
Oh, okay. All Together Now? No.
No, it's not even Yellow Submarine, is it?
Carnival of Light?
Oh, that might be, but it's not been released. Shall I tell you?
Yeah.
Flying from Magical Mystery Tour.
So what, yeah, because I guess it was a bit of a jam, that, wasn't it, rather than...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this song is, for me, yeah, I think it's fascinating because it's him redoing a Beatles song. And it's like he redid Grow Old With Me recently with Paul. And anything where a Beatle references their previous selves, I always find very interesting. And it's, it's not, but the original was just a throwaway song anyway. It was just a kind of like repeating themselves for 6 minutes and they edited it down. So there wasn't really much room to work to, but it's, I think he's done the best he could with not much, really.
Yeah. There is
but
that,
you could say the same with the whole album, really.
There's that thing, isn't it? It's like, I think the people that Ringo collaborates with, and I've seen the All-Star Band and they were amazing. I saw them in New York about 5 years ago, 6 years ago, and it was one of the most fun gigs I've ever been to. He was great. The band was amazing. They had, like, you know, dude from Mr. Mister, and they had Todd Rundgren, and they had, like, guy from Toto. And so they do a bunch of Ringo songs, and then they come and do, like, their hits. And it's great. It's, like, the best party band ever. But you think sometimes with those collaborations, is it people have just phoned him up? Or, like, he's just bumped into? Like, I don't see how Joe Perry, as nice a chap as he seems, where the musical overlap is between...
Well, I think that's Mark Hudson who produced it. He worked with them, perhaps.
But, like, Paul seems to seek out people that compliment or bring something to him, or, like... Whereas Ringo's just kind of like... Yeah, you know, I just bumped into him in, like, round the corner of Santa Monica, and he said, oh, would you do something? I said, all right. So we came and did something. It feels a bit like that. Yeah, which is another sign of the open-heartedness of the guy, I guess.
It is. It is. You're absolutely right. It's, is it, you know, he's like the Buddha, essentially, isn't he, of the Beatles as well. We see that in the Get Back film. There's just something, there's an aura, a warmth. You can tell all the wives and the girlfriends just love being with Ringo because he's just easy to be around. There's a sort of orangey magic around him. However, these songs, let's be honest, are so unbelievably workmanlike. I don't think he's particularly sitting there fretting as a sort of producer worrying about, you know, will Joe Perry's vibe work on this? You know, he's just hurling his mate, the people that he, like you said, people that he's met in home base, isn't he? You know, in Hollywood, in the Hollywood home base. You know, they've been in there, in, you know, sort of picking up some plant pots, and he's like, hey, what are you doing next Thursday? You know, need a bit of guitar on this, you know. And it works quite well, as you say.
Is there a home base in Beverly Hills?
Have you not been?
It's going to be, no, yeah, Wix.
Listen, people always going about Tower Records, but the home base, geez, and they're all the stars are in there.
I'll have a blue Christmas without you. I'll be so blue thinking about you. Decorations in red on a green Christmas tree won't mean a thing if you're not here with me.
Track 9, written by Billy Hayes and J.W. Johnson, most famously recorded by Elvis Presley. Although for me, the go-to version is by Shakin' Stevens.
Obviously.
Blue Christmas.
Oh, 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 Christmas. Look, listen, no. To me, this is like Elvis has died again when you hear this. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm a big Elvis Presley fan, you know. And even the original Elvis version is a little bit throwaway. That's in Elvis's post GI phase, isn't it? His filmic phase, and you know, it's even, the song itself's a bit of a lightweight piece, you know. But no, actually, I retract that. I think that looking at it through that lens, I think Ringo and Elvis stand up quite well against each other in this version.
But you are like,
I'd love to see that. I'd love to see because the registers. It would have been nice to see Ringo and Elvis do a song together. In the 70s, before, you know, for all
this would have been good. That would have been good. That would have been good.
I think it would have been nice.
I mean, if you look at, so this was 1999, yeah?
Yeah.
If you think at the same time he's releasing this, you've got like 13 by Blur, the Slim Shady LP, Beck's Midnight Vultures, Battle of Los Angeles, Rage, I think was then.
Yeah.
What else was that year?
That's true. That was a fucking year, wasn't it?
This feels like an album very much out of time. The production doesn't feel particularly contemporary to that year. It doesn't feel like he's trying to break new ground. But did he care? Did he give a shit? Probably didn't. No. Probably just had a nice time and walked back through his palm tree-lined garden, had a bacon sandwich with Barbara and put his slippers on. So maybe he didn't give a shit. But it does feel... It's an album out of its... You know, Paul... All of Paul's albums that he's done, there's recognisable echoes of what's happening at that moment in music, you know. That's always... I'm a big fan of Chaos and Creation in the Backyard, and I like there's stuff when you're like, oh, you can see Paul is taking things, which he's allowed to do because he invented them in the first place, taking influences and different producers and stuff. This doesn't feel like... It feels like a record that's been made by a bunch of people in LA that haven't been listening to anything, you know, for a very long time. Which is quite sweet in itself, I guess.
Yeah, it's a period. It's a little period piece, isn't it? It's a sort of... And I think, I guess that's it, when you're a Beatle, you can do that, I suppose, can't you? You can sort of... So, like you've just said, you know, we kind of kicked a lot of this shit off, so... I'm just going to stare Ringo right down the middle until people meet me at the other side, you know.
Exactly. It's very difficult to criticise.
I'd say most of the Beatles albums didn't, other than Paul maybe. I mean, like Flaming Pie, that was slap bang in the middle of Britpop, and you can certainly pick up elements of Britpop in that. But I'd say any John, George especially, Gone Troppo, you think of that in 1982, does that represent, I don't know, New Order or whatever? But I don't think any of them, once they split, really bothered, other than Paul, worrying about what else was going on.
No.
Yeah, but when you've done it, when you've essentially, when you have built the foundations and maybe the walls and the doors and the windows and the roof of the house... Right, you've done that with your abilities as songwriters and recording artists and musicians. Then when you've done that, someone else comes along and just puts a new pair of curtains up or puts a new awning over the door, a new chimney pot. It's like, well, it doesn't matter. You've done the thing. You've built the thing. Everything else is just adding to this creation. But the foundations and walls were yours. You did that. So does it matter?
I mean, you've built a very interesting but overreaching metaphor.
Though. Yeah, I mean,
that is creaking really... on some very, very shaky foundations. But I do know what you're saying, though. You know, they can do what they want, basically, because of the Beatles. I expect this bit to stand alone and be excised in the edit, but on a sort of slightly unprofessional stroke, comedic tack here. My battery's on 7% now, and I can't get the charger back in to the fucking thing. So it's literally like the end of Speed now.
Okay.
You know, Keanu Reeves and Sandra Bullock. If I do go, you could sort of just explain this dickhead's...
Keep this.
Battery's gone.
Keep this in the podcast. This has to stay, Chris.
Yeah, please do.
The clock. Counting down.
Track 12, Pox Biscum, brackets, Peace Be With You. And this song consists of the phrase Peace Be With You, sung in a very Beatly way in various languages, followed by Ringo singing Merry Christmas. And you've got tablas, sitars, George Martin strings, backwards guitars, and for some reason, random dog barking. And I think George Harrison will be proud of this. What do you think?
Does this for you feel like the most interesting and sort of genuine sort of Christmassy moment that shares some ethos with what the Beatles were all about? Is this what you're saying?
I think this song I would put in my top 20 favourite solo Beatles songs.
Goodness, that is strong.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
I'm gonna fucking buy it as well. There you go. If Ringo's got nothing else out of this, he's got 99p off me, or at least at least some of that 99 pence is going to Ringo.
He'll get about a penny of that, but
I'll be rubbing my hands waiting for that penny to drop.
It's kind of beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it upsets me that I'm even going to say it sounds a bit like Paxo Bisto, which would be two different.
But it's that's Christmassy as well.
I've just really ruined it. Paxo Bistow.
Yum, yum, yum.
Yum, 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 yum. Sage and onion. Cranberry. Oh, oh. But yeah, it's nice, isn't it? It's got that. Any time when you mix that sort of the tablas and that stuff, and once again, done with love. But yeah, it does sound like accoutrements for a Christmas dinner.
I mean, what I will say is, before my battery goes, I think that it does redeem itself at the end. I understand why it's in your top 20 Christmas songs, Chris. There is something beautiful about that. And it embraces the joy and the magic of Christmas very nicely. But just in case my battery goes, can I just put this out to the cosmos? Could I get a new MacBook for Christmas if anybody does hear this? And here's me being, sort of unceremoniously cut off at the end of the podcast. It's because I've got a defective hard drive sort of charger. So I just want to hurl that in at the end, which I realise is a bit self-regarding. But yeah, I enjoyed that. Very much enjoyed it.
You've had a defective hard drive for years. Also, I mean, we should put, before you go, I know that when it comes to the Beatles and Christmas, Sean, there is only one Christmas song for you, isn't there, really? Tell us.
Well, it is very difficult, because I do think that the emotional heart is John and Yoko. I think that makes me cry every time. But every time I hear bom, 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 ding, 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 bom, I melt completely, especially because I remember what we were talking about before, about Paul McCartney and his dad and his friends and family in that little pub somewhere in Sussex or something. That's that little grainy video. And it just, yes, that to me embodies all great family Christmases. So congratulations to Paul on that one.
This is it. I think we're of a generation that we were like at maybe our most impressionably Christmas around the mid-80s, yeah. Which is, I mean, obviously every generation has their own Christmas. Every Christmas belongs to everyone. But we were around at that super, like, formative 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 time when they were just really releasing, you know, Power of Love. They're releasing Band Aid. They're releasing like Fairy Tale in New York. They were all coming out in that era that we were at that age where it was just magical. Yeah. And I very much think about Simply Having a Wonderful Christmas Time as kind of part of that. So it cuts deep, that song.
I think it's a shame with my last 0.5% battery. I must say this, that if Ringo casts his ear over this,
he's just been cut off. Literally, he was just about to make some amazingly emotive
the
comment
most
about
poignant moment in the whole thing.
His laptop runs out of battery. This has been, not down to you, Chris, this has been one of the most technically shonky egg pods, purely because of me and Sean, not you. I've had to run off every couple of seconds to make sure my little one's all right and she's okay. But, oh,
it's
man.
Christmas.
I was just going to say, like, because I've got, I think we talked about this before, we might mention it before, I can't remember. But, you know, every family has their sort of weird Christmas habits. Like, you know, some families have, like, oh, we always have to have baked beans with our meal, or like, oh, we always wake up at 7 and the first thing we do is have an egg sandwich, or like, whatever it is. There's always, like, yeah. Oh, we have to wear Christmas hats for a half an hour at the middle. Everyone has one. One of my family's ones is when we used to have Christmas dinner together, my family, my mum and my stepdad, my brother and whoever, we'd wake up and we'd have like a Christmas album, like lots of Christmas different hits. But when we had our dinner, a Christmas dinner, we'd play the White Album, which really? Is not a Christmassy record. My mum loves that record, amongst lots of other Beatles stuff. My mum is not necessarily like super avant-garde in her listening taste. She's got a really broad and eclectic musical taste. But yeah, we would be listening to Revolution Number 9 and having the port and Stilton and Crackers.
Wow.
It's just the thing that
incredible.
We did. Yeah. I'm sure everyone's got like sort of similar things, but yeah. So, Christmas for me is always kind of listening to the White Album. Oddly, a very not Christmassy record, but in our household when I was growing up, that's kind of what we did.
That's incredible.
Isn't that weird?
And it's a long old. I'm guessing it's a long old album, so you've got time to cook the meal.
It's perfect. You have your starters. You've got your bits and pieces. You've got your mains. You got, you know, crackers and hats and games and indoor fireworks and all the other bits and pieces you might want, and, you know, marzipan fruits at the end, bit of Christmas pud, and it's the whole album. That and Christmas is always, obviously, we talked about, like, you know, the Beatles having product. But I think it's quite nice that every year there's like a Beatles thing to get as a Christmas prezzy. I mean, you know, you can moan about like, oh yeah, it's like so predictable. It's going to be all. It's like, yeah, great. I want. Oh, is there a new Yellow Submarine on Blu-ray? Great. I love that. You know, yeah. I think it's kind of cool.
So Matt, sadly Sean's not here.
Because his battery ran out.
But what would you say to anybody who was considering buying this album?
I'd say download Christmas Eve and that final track. And that would provide you with a nice little dose of Ringo Christmas. I feel bad now for being so hypercritical because it's done with love. I keep saying this. It's obviously clearly done with a lot of love. And even if it doesn't land, you know, if it doesn't fulfil the criteria of like what we regard as being a classic Christmas song, who cares? It's Christmas. It's Christmas. Things now I've spent a bit of time with it, it's going to be on a Christmas playlist. That's going to happen. Although as well, my friend Roddy found an amazing Beatles Christmas hymns done in the style of the Beatles. Do you know this one?
No.
Oh my gosh. Right, I'm going to send this to you. Hark! ! Rather than help. Christmas, classic Christmas songs performed in a Beatles style, right? If anybody doesn't know this record.
Oh, wow.
If anyone doesn't know this, it's amazing. For instance.
This is take 17. 1, 2, 3, 4!
Right. I'm going to send you this. Oh, this is so good. It is absolutely amazing. The Away in a Manger is phenomenal. it's the absolute best, this. It is so good. Yeah. Hark. I tweet it every year. And people just go, this is amazing. Who did it? And I've got no idea more about it than other than the fact it was.
Oh,
it's just the most on the button. Brilliant. So, yeah, that's my Beatles go-to record, even though it's not the Beatles.
So, sadly, Sean's battery's died, can't be here. But on behalf of both of you, thank you very much. And happy Christmas.
Yeah, happy Christmas. I mean, it's been a good year for Beatles fans, hasn't it? I think.
Wow. Yeah,
it's been a pretty good one. And have you saved any Beatles Christmas presents on your list, or did you go out and remortgage the house on Red and Blue, and now you've got everything?
I did get a book. I got a promo book. Then my wife said, "Oh, I've bought that for Christmas," so I gave it away to an Egg Pod listener. So I've read a bit of it. So I'll be looking forward to reading that over Christmas. The Mal Evans book.
Oh yeah, the Mal book. I haven't read it yet. Right.
Yeah, I read a bit of it. And then she said, no, I bought that for Christmas. So I read like four chapters.
That's going to be your Christmas reading on the sofa in your gym jams.
Yeah.
With a glass of red. I mean, I bought my brother. I got one for myself as well. A little. I'm holding up a Bassman sticker. You know, the green font on the white sticker that Paul has on his bass in Get Back. I got.
Brilliant.
Someone's making little Etsy stickers. So because my brother's got... a copy off in a base, so I got him that for Christmas. And what other Beatles stuff am I getting? There's always something. There's always, like, you know, a Christmas tree ornament or a pair of socks or something, isn't there? Beatlesy to get. And
there is.
We just love it. It's just great. Never ends. It never ends.
Well, Matt Everett and Sean Keaveney, wherever you are, the late great.
I'm so sorry. It's been such a strange show. I mean, yeah, we weren't prepared enough. We've been running about because it's Christmas. This is a real thing. We're running about with our family, trying to get jobs and work done out the way and find time to do this because we wanted to do it because we love you and you're brilliant and the show's amazing. And please ask us back and when we're like slightly less frenetic. But that's Christmas, isn't it? I guess it's more Christmassy.
Absolutely.
But yeah. Hark. Classic Christmas songs performed in a Beatles style. That is the one by the Fab Four. It's absolutely amazing.
Matt Everett. and Sean Keaveney, thank you so much.
Chris, I'm so embarrassed. What I was just going to say before I was cut off with my last 0.5% of battery was that when Ringo listens to this podcast, which he inevitably will, because I know that from hearsay that he's a big fan of the podcast, you know, he's going to be crestfallen that at the end, me and Matt just went off on one talking about John and Paul's. So if he does hear this, two things. Sorry about that, Ringo. We really like some of this album, especially the last song. And secondly, you couldn't see your way clearer buying me a new MacBook, could you?